Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing proper protective equipment is a must. A proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard, designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, is an essential part of your protection. In two short appointments, you can get your own custom-fitted mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226, or you can access them online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. One more time, Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, 487-2226. Working to get Anthony Sanfilippo online, we'll get him on momentarily. And the Philadelphia Flyers, as I was on with Hustler and Lawless, filling in for Gary earlier this week.
Did a great job.
Thank you. And I said to Huss that the one thing you can always count on in the NHL is that the Philadelphia Flyers are always going to be newsworthy.
Always newsworthy. And you guys know how much I love Scotty Hartnell. It looks like he's out for 4 to 8 weeks. Huge loss. You've got Mezeros, who's injured. They've now had to call up Andrews Lilla, so a lot of injury problems there.
And let's talk to the man about it, Anthony Sanfilippo.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Anthony Sanfilippo, our good friend from PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. How are you, buddy?
I'm great, boys. How you doing?
We're doing very well. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to coming up and seeing you guys in a couple weeks, too.
We're looking, that was going to be my first question, is to make sure you're coming up to Winnipeg in the middle of February, because really, where else would you want a vacation?
It's funny, the Flyers are in Florida this weekend, and I had a family conflict as far as scheduling was concerned, so I had to bail out on the trip. So my first extended trip as a writer for the Flyers website will be visiting Toronto and Winnipeg. I can't wait.
You know, Anthony, before every show we have a family conflict, so don't worry.
Anthony, the Flyers got their first win of the year a couple nights ago, beating the Rangers. Obviously a key victory for the Flyers. Was there any panic after the slow start? And if so, has that now alleviated?
Yeah, no, I didn't ever sense panic. There was definitely frustration. I mean, they were really getting annoyed with the way things were going. I mean, you know, you look at the Pittsburgh game, and with the exception of maybe the first 10 minutes of that game, they were the better team, just couldn't score. I mean, they had the one goal, but that was it. Fleury actually played really well against them, so that was a frustrating loss. Maybe the Buffalo game, I mean, they had a couple calls that went against them that they weren't happy about, and they kind of let that, get the better of them, and then Buffalo got a couple, it was a close game to late in the third. Buffalo got a couple of scores, and then they lost that game. And then the Devils, they were just not a very good team after the first period. They took 14 minors and just an ugly game. So you could see frustration definitely coming into play, but it's not like they were playing poor hockey. So once that happened, they got together and said, you know what, we're banged up, we're beat up, we're missing a number of guys. We got to kind of refocus, simplify, and what they did against the Rangers is instead of playing a wide-open style that they're known for, they really tightened it up and played tough defensive hockey, physical hockey, and took advantage of opportunities and were able to pull out the win for the first time this year.
That's an interesting point, Anthony. You think, with the lack of, I guess, depth on the back end, and that's my next question in terms of you mentioning them changing their style. How much of that is because of the defensive injuries that they've had? Obviously, Chris Pronger coming in, playing last year, and then obviously essentially retiring now, being on long-term injury reserve. Andres Mezeros being injured. How big is that injury now for the Flyers, considering the lack of depth that they have?
Yeah, I'll answer your first question first, and then I'll get to Mezeros in a second. But, I think that a lot of what's going on this year as far as a schematic approach to how they're playing has a lot to do with the fact that they're not as strong defensively as they would have hoped to have been this season. Obviously, they made a big push in the summer for both Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, got neither, and really had to come into the season with a bigger yet slower defense. And they were really looking to do that, sit back a little bit more with their defensive play and really try and take away shots, block shots, and limit chances for the other team and make Ilya Bryzgalov's job a little bit easier. And that's the one thing that they've been successful at through four games this year, They really haven't, you know, hung out their goalie to dry. I mean, they, you know, maybe a goal here or there, you look at it and say that was a mistake, a defensive error, or whatever. But for the most part, Brizgalov has played really well, but the reason he's played well is because of how the defense has played in front of him. So there's definitely been a change to that approach schematically for the Flyers. But, yes, losing Mazzaros for a month is a big loss. They don't have a lot of depth on the blue line. They had a recall, Andreas Lilja, who is 37 years old. He's got two bad hips, a bad back, and you know, he went through waivers and nobody claimed him at a very palatable salary of, you know, $725,000 a year. So if all teams are always looking for depth on defense, if you can't take a veteran defenseman at that salary, that means that there's not a lot there. So that's really what the Flyers are looking at now. I wouldn't be surprised if they went out and did something else to try and get another defenseman, but and maybe even look to the KHL or something of that like. But they definitely are playing a certain style to try and keep things, you know, a little bit closer in games.
Anthony, anybody who listens to this show knows how much I love Scotty Hartnell. I love his game. He obviously has gone down with an injury, taking that puck I believe it was the foot. So it looks like they've replaced him and gone out and signed Mike Knubel, who kind of, you know, is a very similar type of player and who's played in Philadelphia before. What percentage of Hartnell's game is really Knubel's game?
Well, the power play. I mean, that's probably it. And I think you're going to see Knubel play that Scott Hartnell role and still be able to do it well on the power play because he's such a big body and he can get in front of the net and you know, take away the goalie's line of sight and these, you know, his goals have always been from, you know, 5 feet in. That's just Mike Knubel's game. And even at 40 years old, he'll be able to still do that well. I don't see him ultimately as a replacement for Hartnell on the top line. He's not going to play top line minutes. He's probably only going to play somewhere in the 12 to 15 minute range. He's more of a third, fourth line winger at this point in his career. But being a veteran guy and being, you know, a real good influence in the locker room, then I think that there's he can bring something to the team, but he certainly will not be replacing Scott Hartnell. So Flyers fans or NHL fans watching the Flyers should not think of it as that's what they did to replace Hartnell. It's just a veteran guy that they brought in to replace part of what Hartnell does, but they're going to need some of their young players to step into the other roles that Hartnell had.
20 minutes to the top of the hour. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we're joined by Anthony Sanfilippo. He's a writer for PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. Anthony, you mentioned, you know, the Flyers looking to acquire potentially a defenseman to fill in some of the gaps they have. Would the Flyers consider trading any of their high-end offensive talent for a stud defenseman? Sort of a supplemental question there is, do they have any interest in restricted free agent P.K. Subban from Montreal?
Yeah, that's been the big talk all over social media for the last 24 to 48 hours since the Mazzaros news came out. And I think that the Flyers would have interest in a Subban if Montreal didn't want Sean Couturier. And that's really what it's coming down to, is that if Montreal's going to trade Subban, they want Couturier, and the Flyers do not want to give up Couturier. They just don't. So to sit there and say, is that a possibility? I don't think it is. I just don't see it as happening. You know, would the Flyers maybe, you know, give up a couple of other players, maybe second-tier prospect talent, and try and sweeten that pot? Maybe, but I think Montreal looks at it and says, we'll either fight this out with Subban until it gets to a point where he wants to come in and play and we keep him, or we get what he's worth, which is the caliber of a Couturier type of player. So I don't think, while it would be a good fit here in Philadelphia, I don't think it's going to happen.
Anthony, in terms of, you know, the Flyers, obviously they have a bunch of leaders in the locker room, and that's one of the reasons why they're able to make the runs that they are in the playoffs past. But was the only option for captain this time around Claude Giroux?
I think that they wanted to have stability there, and that's why they gave it to Giroux this year. Ultimately, it would probably have been better for one season to give it to Thiemannin. He is their unquestioned leader in that locker room. And that's why when you saw when they made the announcement Timonen is the associate captain, which is something that we've never heard before in hockey. Before, you know, we know the alternate captains, and Hartnell and Briere are the alternate captains, but Timonen's the associate captain, basically saying that, you know, he's only here for one more season, and he's really the veteran guy that we look to lead the team. But ultimately, Claude Giroux's our best player. He's our star. He's going to be here for a long time, but we want to give him the captaincy right now and let him just take it and run with it. I think they just wanted consistency with that captaincy. They haven't had it. They've had seven different captains in eight seasons, and I think that's more what the reason was of giving the captaincy to Giroux now. But there's still no question, when you go to that locker room, the go-to guy for leadership is Kimmo Timonen.
Anthony, I have to ask you about Luke Shen, because I actually really like his game, and I liked him on Toronto, and I thought that was even though they had to give up James Van Riemsdyk to get him, I thought that was a trade that really benefited both teams. How have you thought he's played so far?
He's been a little up and down, but that's not to say that he's been bad. I say that because the Flyers are playing him on the top pairing with Timonen. He's getting the big minutes. He's playing against the best players on the opposition. And when you look at who the Flyers have played so far, he's really had to go up against some really top quality competition. So when there's a mistake, he takes a penalty or returns the puck over. It really comes from, I think, him being thrust into that role. Which I'll be honest with you, when they made the trade, I didn't think they were going to do that right away. I thought they were going to give him some time to kind of develop a little bit and get confidence in his game. But they, you know, the Flyers are a big believer in throwing you right into the fire and letting you learn what it's like, you know, on the fly. And that's pretty much what Shen's done. He's not looked bad. He's had a couple of things where you sit there and say, boy, you wish his vision was a little bit better. He's had some open teammates, and he's passed the puck into traffic rather than pass it to an open guy. But for the most part, it's not been horrible. I think ultimately they had him working with Chris Pronger during training camp for several hours sitting in a video room. And I think Pronger's going to keep checking in with the team, keep working with him, even from afar. I think ultimately Luke Shen's going to be, you know, what you like about him and what his prospect status has always been. But I think it's going to take a little bit of time, and if your Flyers are willing to be a little bit patient with him, I think ultimately he'll be a very good defenseman.
Anthony, we'll let you go on this last question. Just by nature of their draft positions, people in Winnipeg are always going to compare Mark Scheifele to Sean Couturier. You mentioned earlier that the Flyers don't want to give up Couturier to acquire a player like PK Subban. In your opinion, how has Couturier looked so far this year for the Flyers?
Yeah, he's been really good. It's funny because until the Rangers game, Couturier had been on the ice for 9 of the 11 goals that the Flyers had given up in the first three games. And the thing of it is, if you go back and look at every one of those goals, he was doing his job in each one of them. I mean, well, one was an empty netter, so I don't really count that one. But the other 10, he was doing what he was supposed to do. He was not out of place. The only thing that you can say is maybe he should have won the faceoff on the one goal by James Neal in the opener for Pittsburgh. It was too clean of a win for the Penguins. Other than that he's been good. And the other night against the Rangers, the 5-on-3 that they killed off for 2 minutes in the third period, Couturier lagged the puck or dragged the puck all the way down the ice, kept it pinned up against the boards for 20 seconds, skated the length back, lifted Rick Nash's stick before he could get a shot off, and then he made a diving play to get the puck out of the zone. That's a kind of shift that you don't normally see a 20-year-old player perform at this level, and yet he was able to do it. The Flyers look at him as part of their future. He's playing second line minutes. He's got one goal, but I think that they expect a little bit more offense from him. But I think it's going to come. I think that he's a top talent for the future for this team.
Anthony Sanfilippo, writer for PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. We'll see you in Winnipeg in a couple weeks.
Looking forward to it, guys.
Likewise. Thanks very much, Anthony.
All right, see ya.
Thanks a lot, Anthony.
Thanks.
Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Should be playing, you know, Remus, we put you into the producer's chair. You don't screw up like this for Rick, I got to tell you.
Holy.
I listen to the round table with you and Rick on a daily basis.
Remus never screws up with Rick.
Rick certainly will not stand for this kind of shoddy production, but when it's us, sure, you don't need any music playing. That's fine.
He's always calling Rick the technical specialist. Rick is always calling Remus the technical specialist.
I guess better late than never, eh, Remus? Is that what you would say?
I pushed the button, it didn't come up.
Yeah, sir, it's the button's fault. It's always the button's fault.
I pushed it, I swear. I pushed the button to play music.
That's weird, because Tim pushed all the right buttons for the first hour and 45 minutes.
I don't know what to say, guys.
You like, well, how, you like how Remus is playing a little Tragically Hip? They're in Winnipeg tonight.
That's true, they are in like Winnipeg tonight. Yeah, well, a good segue there. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by our friends at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. You're looking for a place to watch the Jets game if you don't have tickets. Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza certainly should be up at the top of your list. Great drink specials. Great pizza and some well-positioned TVs to catch the game.
Go to Carbone. Saw our boy Daniel Simon after the Jets game yesterday. Go there. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you, and they'll take care of you.
Exactly right. Gentlemen, let's continue on discussing some news and notes around the NHL. Number of different contract and player situations that still need to be resolved.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They've sort of been in existence from the start of the year. Some have developed so far in the first week of the year. Got about five of them. I want to go through them, and you guys can tell me how you think they're going to get resolved. You know, signing, trade, whatever it is. Start with Montreal. P.K. Subban and the Montreal Canadiens. It's probably the most important of all five of them, and yet there seems to be absolutely no movement on either side. How do you see the P.K. Subban situation getting resolved?
That's a good question, Drew. I got an email from a listener who wanted us to delve into this issue, and how does it resolve itself is a great question, and I saw it in the show plan, and I'm not sure. I know you have Donnie Meehan, who will push the boundaries here in this negotiation. You have P.K. Subban, who seems to be fully on board with that. And then the other side, you have Marc Bergevin, a first-time GM who has to make sure that he doesn't get pushed around this negotiation. This has an effect on future negotiations for him because of how agents view him. So I, when looking at it that way, I feel like I don't think the Habs are going to give. And we mentioned earlier in the show, I think they can surprise teams, but the expectations are not such, and Bergevin hasn't set them up in such a way that they're expected to make the playoffs. And with that being said, and with already really a half a season gone, let him sit out. Let him lose the year if you're Bergevin, and then you see what happens in the offseason. Now, when you do that, you do risk having a significant issue in terms of, I'm not sure in the past how many times this has happened, but how many times has a player sat out a year, period? And if he sat out the year, how many times does he then return unless forced, like Yashin? Although Yashin was under contract, does he return to the team that he didn't sign with after one full year?
Worth noting, P.K. Subban is a restricted free agent with absolutely no arbitration eligibility. Same situation Zach Bogosian was in last year. He seems to want a Drew Doughty-esque deal. And Marc Bergevin, you know, a long year, big money deal. Marc Bergevin is counted with a 2-year deal at really not a lot of money whatsoever.
Richie, everything that we're hearing out of Montreal is that P.K. Subban wants similar term, same ballpark, let's say, as Drew Doughty. He wants just under Drew Doughty money, if not, he wants Drew Doughty money. He wants to be compensated, and obviously, he wants more here. That's what happens in contract negotiations, but he's got no bargaining power. And Pat Hickey in the Montreal Gazette mentioned this yesterday in an article. Maybe we can tweet that out if Reem has time here. But he was saying that, you know, the Habs are doing well. They've gone off to a decent start, even mm-hmm. though three games, you know, you can't get too excited about it. But it's like you said, Richie, they might let him sit out and say, okay, sit out a year, and then We'll see if you're going to get a better deal out of us. He's asking for a little bit more term and money than they want to give him right now.
Marc Bergevin impresses me in that he is utilizing the system
to his advantage
in the way that it is supposed to be utilized and it was built. And what happens is he's doing it, you know, it's to me it's more of an unselfish way because other GMs follow that method. And what happens is the players don't have the same kind of leverage when they sign outlandish deals like Jeff Skinner signed.
Do you think he's a Montreal Canadian when he steps onto the ice next time?
I mean, it's too early still to say, Drew, on that one. You know, there could be a little bit of give and take on both sides. That's too early to say. But I think with any player, and I think Bergevin, if I would guess his philosophy would be the same in terms of contract negotiation, looking at the facts, and then player evaluation. If he gets a good offer for P.K. Subban signed or not, I'm sure he'll consider it.
Next situation, another guy who's a restricted free agent, no arbitration rights, sitting out, still unsigned, Ryan O'Reilly in the Colorado Avalanche.
I find this one to be more difficult because he's not your prototypical offensive star player. He could be a second-line center. You know, you read some places, maybe Elliot Friedman saying he could be a first-line center with the right wingers. I see him as more a second-line guy. and really driving force and doing everything you ask a guy to do. Sherry Bassin, you know, in the OHL, tell you this great guy, you know, Don Cherry, obviously loves Ryan O'Reilly, has talked about him at length. He brings the intangibles to the table, and he also was very productive offensively last year. But what number is, what kind of value does that provide? And it's a really interesting question. He's not your your natural, offensively gifted number one center. So then you're trying to determine his value. I think it's hard to predict his value right now. And I think another, I think a three-year deal here at the three and a half range gives you a, maybe even four. Three years, three and a half. So something like a three-year, $10.5 million deal seems like a fair meeting ground in the middle. And if O'Reilly can continue to provide the value he did last year and maybe even improve on it, then you can get a better deal. And he's proven that he can play in all situations. But right now, the Avs can't, I bet you aren't sure that he can continue that offense of trajectory. And they know what they're getting, but it might be limited, and they don't want to sign a guy to a $5 million deal, whatever it is. And they differ in terms of what they've said they've offered and what they've demanded and not. And it obviously depends on term. But can you lock up that much money in a guy who you don't know whether or not he can produce at a level that will provide a certain amount of value for you?
Richie, you mentioned Sherry Bassin. He's a Ryan O'Reilly's a former Erie Otter, obviously, and In the first couple of years in Colorado, he didn't put up big numbers, and he wasn't playing a top six role. And last year, he played a top six role, led the team in points. And you're right. It's tough to give a guy a 3 or 4 year deal at a $5 million cap hit or whatever, making a significant, or even maybe he's asking for 5 years. It's not written in stone what exactly is the sticking point here. Mm-hmm. But you know, we talked about bridge contracts. They gave Matt Duchene a bridge contract. It's tough to give Ryan O'Reilly a sweeter deal, if you want to call it that, when they're expecting much higher things out of Matt Duchene. Not to say anything wrong against Ryan O'Reilly, but Matt Duchene's a second overall pick. Ryan O'Reilly's a second rounder who's turned out to be a heck of a second rounder. But that contract, I don't know where that's going. I mean, I thought P.K. Subban and Ryan O'Reilly would be signed by now with the shortened season. You're really, you know, there's a lot of risk here with these guys who are holding out for more money. You're already losing money. You've already lost a paycheck because you haven't started the season, which is a shortened season already. And Ryan O'Reilly is a guy, hey, you know what? Third season in the NHL, he really bumped up his point totals. He doubled his point totals. But you're in a situation where you've got Landeskog, Duchene, Stastny there. There's other guys that are commanding more money, obviously already under contract. But that's one that I think he might be playing too much of hardball here.
You bring up a good point about Duchene. I think that's a great point, Ezzy. You know, in terms of his deal, can you pay him more? And I know, as he just said, Duchene's a more offensively talented guy, maybe hasn't been as productive as they'd like. But a 3.5 that Duchene's at, maybe you extend that another year and you say a little bit in the middle and we'll see who you are. But I think that point is a very, very good one by Ezzy because, you know, you have that internal salary structure. It's important in every organization. We had Kenny Holland on in the first hour. Detroit has been brilliant at the structuring your own team salary. This guy can't get more than this guy because this is what the leader provides. That's what Lidstrom provides. Anaheim kind of did that with Getzlaff and Perry. Well, you can't really pay guys more than Getzlaff and Perry because they're the best players. So you want to make sure you keep an internal cap, and it's kind of a self-policing system in the locker room.
Next one, Nito Niederreiter has apparently asked for a trade from the New York Islanders, former first-round pick for the Isles. Mm-hmm. How do you see the Nino Niederreiter situation resolving?
Well, if they don't trade him and they've indicated they're not going to, he's going to play for the Islanders, and he doesn't have any leverage. And the truth is, I saw him play last year in the A, and he had some chances, didn't look terrific, but it was too early. I mean, this one game, and his confidence obviously hadn't been built yet. He's almost a point of game in the A this year. And a real talent. So I don't know why the Islanders would give him away unless they get a great deal. And if they won't, I see him ending up playing on the Isles.
Yeah, let's be honest, his year last year was beyond awful, scoring one goal in 55 games. But the guy's got so much talent, and he's a high draft pick. And, you know, I can't add too much to what Richie said because I think he did a good job of explaining it. But, you know, Niederreiter, again, he's asking for a trade, and he struggled. You know, he's a guy like him, you know, again, back to the Ken Holland interview, which was, it was great to have him on. You know, Nito Niederreiter's got to learn what it's like to play the North American game. He's got to stay in Bridgeport, and he's got to pay his dues. And I don't know, you know, and a team like the Islanders, they've got other players that can fill those roles, and they've got other players that are better than him at his point in his career. He's got to stick it out and play in the AHL, and if he doesn't like it, well, tough luck. You're either going to stay in the AHL or you're going to get traded.
Last one, Ottawa's glut of goaltenders, Craig Anderson, Robin Lehner, and Ben Bishop. All three could arguably start in the NHL right now.
Yeah, arguably. Ben Bishop didn't play great yesterday, though, not helping his stock. You go with Anderson, and Lehner's seems to still be that goalie of the future, and Bishop you traded for last year.
They traded Bishop. They acquired Bishop from St. Louis for a second-round pick.
And they can't trade him for anything less. That's their problem, right?
Right. So,
We'll see what comes of that, but I don't know. I mean, there's certainly teams that would, you know, for example, there's many teams out there, like a Calgary, who would probably trade for a Ben Bishop, for example.
Well, but Kupsov's not getting any younger, and they don't seem to have a goaltender of the future there.
Exactly. But will they give you a second-round pick? And if they won't, then you just basically traded for a goaltender when you had goaltending depth and then got less of a draft pick in return a year later. So Ottawa wants to save face here. So it's going to be an interesting situation. Now, how it resolves itself, I see Bishop actually eventually getting traded, but I see maybe more players in the mix, maybe a player or two thrown in so they can kind of mask what they get back.
What a great situation for Ottawa to be in. You've got tradable assets. You've got three really good goalies. So, yeah, I think...
And their current starter, Craig Anderson, has probably got the lowest ceiling of them all.
Yeah, and he's a veteran. He's not... I mean, the future of the team is obviously Robin Lehner. So, Ben Bishop, all indications are that he is going to be traded. And it's a great situation for them to be in because they're going to get a nice pick or a player in return. And they're off to a good start right now, so...
Let's go to break. When we come back, Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver province is going to join us. You're listening to TSN 1290 and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Ben Kuzma, a writer for the Vancouver province. He's with the Canucks in San Jose. Ben, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, not a problem. How you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself?
Good, thank you.
That's good. Ben, after the last two victories, last night a real dominating performance in Anaheim against the Ducks and the victory before, have panic-stricken Canucks fans stepped away from the panic button?
Well, they're always just one reach away, whether it's the revolving goalie circus or too many injuries, not enough goals, or losing to the wrong teams at the wrong time. There's always going to be that sense in Vancouver because... You know, to those of us who cover this team on a regular basis, if you go back to that Stanley Cup final with Boston, the Canucks seem far removed from that team, whether it's, through injuries or changing roster or maybe a roster that hasn't changed enough. They've got a lot to prove in a division that's going to be tougher this year. But, they showed us last night when the spirit moves them what they can do. I mean, the Ducks were, culpable for spending most of the night in the penalty box and trying to run them out of the rink. But I think you saw when they're properly motivated and they're led by the Sedins and they score three power play goals and get that kind of performance from Corey Schneider, they're going to be a load in the division and they'll probably win it for the fifth straight year.
Ben, of course, we have to ask you about goaltending, and I'm sure you expected this question. In terms of the timeline for a Roberto Luongo deal, do you have any idea when that will be?
Well, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they asked me the very same question, and I said, if I'm Mike Gillis right now, there's a couple of important things right now. They're in the middle of a three-game road trip. They need to win games, and they've got back-to-back San Jose Sunday and in L.A. on Monday. Mm-hmm. And, you've got a situation where, A, yes, you want to move Roberto because you need the assets, and a lot of people are wondering, well, what a luxury to have two bona fide starting goalies. That's true, but... They also need a situation for a third-line center, somebody who can eat up second-line minutes, mm-hmm. and probably a prospect to go with that. And Mike Gillis has been shopping Roberto for a long time, and he'll tell you that he's had offers, that you know, it's contingent on what the other team's going to do with its roster. He wouldn't name the team, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out some of the teams who need goaltending help. So with all that coming into play, I'm of the mind that, you know, we're probably in this 10-game window here of not only the Canucks trying to get their game together, but see what else happens around the league. I mean, you know, what's happening with goaltending around the league? Who's suffering an injury or who's willing to give up the package that Mike Gillis is going to say yes to? I mean, that could happen in 2 days or it could happen in 2 weeks, but I'm of the mind right here in the middle of this very important road trip that, you know, they need both goalies, and Alain Vigneault likes to, you know, play them and rotate them, and especially in back-to-back. So I would imagine Roberto's going to play here Sunday in San Jose and then probably come back with Corey on Monday in Los Angeles.
Ben, early this season, Zach Cassian is playing on the top line with Daniel, and Henrik Sedin picked up a goal yesterday. What have you thought of his play so far?
Well, I got to admit, I'm pleasantly surprised. I mean, the big thing with Cassian is when they got him from Buffalo in the trade for Cody Hodgson. I mean, there was basically there was quite a clamor about that because at the time, you know, Cody Hodgson had 16 goals in 60 games, was centering your second power play unit, and probably is going to be a guy who plays in the league for 10 years and gets 20-plus goals. I think the Canucks thought at the deadline they had enough scoring and that they needed size to go as far in the playoffs as they thought they were going to go. They got a soft player in Cassian. In terms of soft, I mean just not in proper shape. The whole offseason was about between Winnipeg, working with Glenn Carnegie, who summers in Winnipeg, with the Sedins in Vancouver, and even at the Nike Center in Portland. Cassian worked out the entire summer. And, of course, then he played with the Chicago Wolves, and that kind of gave him a leg up. He's leaner. He's a little bit quicker. And, you know, he's got some pretty good hands. And it's funny. He's a project, but you see a little bit of Todd Bertuzzi in him from Bertuzzi's glory days in Vancouver. And it took Todd a few years to get going with that famous West Coast Express line. But from what I've seen from Cassian, I'm impressed because I kind of projected him as maybe a third-line guy. But to the Canucks' credit, they say, what have we got here? We don't know. What have we got? Put him up there because that frees up Alex Burrows to come down and help that second line and play center because with Kessler and Booth out, they're really hurting for secondary scoring, and Cassian's got 3 goals in 4 games, so that's pretty impressive.
Ben, do you think he has the hands to ever be as good as Bertuzzi?
You know, I wonder about that because the Calgary game, you know, he went around the net, lost the handle, came back, got the puck back, double-clutched, and found the top of the net, and, you know, you get those sweet feeds from the Sedins. Last night, you still got to pick that corner with a wrist shot, so for a big guy, I say they're pretty soft. You know, time is the big judge of everything. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. He just turned 22 the other day. So, but if he keeps progressing, then they're going to stop comparing Cassian and Hodgson in Vancouver.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Ben Kuzma. He's a writer for the Vancouver Province. Ben, much ado about Ryan Kessler, both you know, in Vancouver and throughout the NHL. If he returns and he's not at full strength when he does return, can the Canucks win the Stanley Cup?
Oh, boy, even if he returns at 100%, you're asking a pretty loaded question. I mean, I think the Canucks are... I'm of the mind that, you know, that they've kind of regressed since the Cup Final with Boston, and whether it's, you know, through not enough change with the roster or filling some needs... I think they'd be hard-pressed. If you look at the conference and how difficult it's going to be, and even within the division, you expect Minnesota and Edmonton to play better. It's going to be tougher to win the division again, which I expect that they'll do. But then it's taking that next step. And, you know, the funny thing about this team is it's just when you think they're, you know, going toward the edge, that they show up and play a game like they did last night, you know, without Kessler, without Booth. So the nucleus is there. I think the big thing to me is, you know, is the will there to do it again. Anybody can climb the mountain the first time. Try to do it again. And just being able to put the puck in the net, it's wanting to play that hard and night after night, especially in a compacted schedule. So I think it's going to be more of a mental challenge for the Canucks who have been there before. Do they have the resolve to do it again? I think that's going to remain an unanswered question until they actually do it.
Ben, Jason Garrison was obviously a big offseason acquisition for the Canucks, and they gave him a nice little chunk of change there. How have you thought he's played thus far this season?
Well, my biggest concern is that I don't think they're using him properly on the power play. I mean, the power play seems to be designed to get bodies to the net, and Garrison, of course, has a heavy shot and had 16 goals with Florida last year, 9 on the power play, which is only second to Shea Weber. So he's got that cannon, but he hasn't really used it yet. The encouraging thing is that in a pairing with Alex Edler, because Garrison's actually pretty good in his own zone, it's allowed Edler to get up in the play and not worry about, what's behind him. And Garrison is good in that respect. So that's been the encouraging part for the Canucks. It's a pretty good pairing. Edler's not comfortable on the right side because he doesn't play it as much, but he's off to a good start. So, you know, Garrison hasn't scored yet, but he's got that heavy, heavy shot. So, you know, that's an encouraging thing for the Canucks, that they seem to have a pairing there. If anything, I would say Dan Hamius and Kevin Bieksa probably struggled more than any other pairing for the Canucks. So as much as they're 2-1-1, there's a lot of room for improvement, but I think Garrison was a pretty good acquisition because you got him for a long time.
And you mentioned Alex Edler. What did you think of the contract that he signed?
Well, if you think about it, I mean, what would he got in the open market next year? You know, a 50-point defenseman equals, you know, ask Christian Erhoff when he went to Buffalo after a 50-point year in Vancouver. Edler had a career-high 49 points last year. And, you know, he's 26. I mean, people tend to forget, you know, they think that he's older or he's something else. I can understand the concern out there because, you know, to be honest with you, some nights Alex Edler looks like a budding Norris Trophy candidate, and some nights he looks like he's lost his way. I mean, he had a horrible playoff against L.A., lost his confidence, kind of unraveled, but he's a big guy who moves the puck extremely well, rushed the puck, and he's got a really heavy shot. It's underrated, and it's a kind of a confidence thing. I mean, he's 26, and, you know, guys in that position don't tend to mature until they probably hit the 30 mark, so getting that kind of a contract on the open market, he probably left money on the table.
Ben, you mentioned just prior to that question about Bieksa and Hamm, who's struggling a bit, but one player that's really impressed me with his development has been Chris Tanev. Can you talk about his play and what your thoughts have been on that?
Yeah, you know, a college free agent kid who came in, and tall, skinny kid who, you know, always looks like he needs to go find a sandwich and bulk up a little bit. But the one thing about Tanev, he's always on the right side of the puck. He makes such smart decisions in his one-on-one play or whatever. I mean, he's not a physical guy, but he lets his smarts get him out of trouble, and he makes that great first outlet pass. He's got to work on his offense. He doesn't shoot the puck as well as he should, but, you know, he's in your third pairing, so it's not an immediate concern there. And, he's been paired with Keith Ballard, who's having a bit of a renaissance here. He's off to a really good start with the Canucks after having a serious concussion last year and not playing in the second half until the playoffs. So Tanev and Ballard has been a really a pleasant surprise early here. But when you talk about Tanev, it's not really surprising because he just makes smart decisions, and he's only going to get better.
Ben, we'll let you go on this last question. Obviously, expectations are high in Vancouver, as they are most every year. You know, if Canucks, you know, start struggling at some point in this year, or maybe they play well and have another first-round meltdown, do you see any situation in which head coach Alain Vigneault is not safe?
Oh, I would think if they went out in the first round that nobody should be safe. I mean, I was amazed last year when they went out in five games to L.A. that, you know, there was really no accountability. Not that I'm saying Alain Vigneault should have lost his job, but, you know, you look at what Chicago did and what San Jose did with the coaching staffs. To me, there has to be some accountability. It's like it didn't happen. You know, it was like a big mulligan or some, you know, mirage in the desert that, you know, the Canucks didn't really go out that quickly and everything's going to be fine. Well, it wasn't fine, and they're getting one real kick at the cat here, and I think it's going to have to be a lot more than a first-round win for everybody to retain their jobs here. I mean, the ownership has put a lot of money into this team and spent to the cap, but it's time to see some return on the investment.
Ben Kuzma from the Vancouver province, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Enjoy San Jose, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, guys, take care.
Take care, Ben. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290, and we'll be back after these commercial messages. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Ben Kuzma of the Vancouver province. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download and available on the TSN1290.ca website. This segment of the program is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, it's final night in town, two shows, 7:45 and 10:30. It's J. Chris Newberg in town. Next week, the incredible Boris, comedian hypnotist. If you've never seen him, one of the funniest, one of the most sought-after comedians and, I guess, hypnotists that you can get your hands on. Concert series event for him, so be sure to check him out. And, of course, coming up at the end of February, very few tickets available, even for the additional shows that have been scheduled. Rob Schneider is going to be at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can get your tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com.
You can do it.
NHL News and Notes.
NHL News and Notes for this Saturday afternoon. Officiating has been a topic of conversation so far in week one of this abbreviated NHL season. If I'm not mistaken, I think Mike Ribeiro is still whining at the officials after Tuesday night's game against between the Caps and the Jets.
Well, Mike Ribeiro's whining? That's a shock.
I know, exactly. I'll ask you about that. You know, let's start with Mike Ribeiro. Do the officials take anything he says legitimately, or has he just got such a reputation?
He doesn't have a good reputation, Richie. He hasn't had a good reputation, and when you beak at these guys, and you know, we've talked about it before. We've had Carey Fraser on the show before. They don't like it when you chirp at them constantly throughout the game, and they're actually told to not do that. And that's why he got the game misconduct. I think he got a game misconduct, did he not, at the
no,
end?
No, he got an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty after he scored that goal to make it 4-2
right,
at that point.
Right, and I thought it was a game misconduct. It wasn't unsportsmanlike conduct, just a two-minute minor. But
he talked to them. When he got that high stick, and they missed it.
Yep.
You know, so he does have some justification. That high stick was in the first period.
Right.
He talked to them. I mean, Ray Ferraro was between the benches on TSN, and he was telling us about it for those who are listening at home.
Uh-huh.
He talked to the officials about that high stick nonstop for the remainder of the game. You can't tell me that his focus is on his teammates and his teammates on the ice if you're constantly worried about the fact that your lip is a little bit bloody.
And it kind of goes to the actions speak louder than words, because people, I don't know if people follow the Caps, but you read some articles before the season began, and Mike Ribeiro and his wife had reconciled, and they had separate actions, and they had reconciled, and they have a baby, a young child, and he had his views on the game had changed, and he'd be more mature, and then, you know, he comes on the ice, and it's the same old, same old. So the question is, has he matured? And if he hasn't, then, you know, Washington acquired him with the fact, you know, with his past in mind. And so they're bearing the brunt of the good, which is, you know, the passing ability, and the bad, which is his lack of focus at times.
You know, Richie, Mike Ribeiro's been in the NHL for a long time, and he's been a good player. He's produced a lot of points for Montreal and Dallas and now Washington. The good players don't complain when they're on the ice and you're down a few goals. You go out there and you try to get your, you do whatever you have to do to get your team back into the game. Whining does not help anything at all. And you know what? The officials, the professionals, they get paid to do their job. And you know, us guys being in the media, on the radio, we're going to complain about it, and we have to do it. They have to be held accountable, not only by the NHL, but by, you know, fans and media. And you have to point out these things. But you know, if a call doesn't go your way, hey, look, in that game, the Jets didn't get the call. You could have called that goal off. Did they let that become a distraction? No, they scored and they got themselves back into the game and eventually won it.
I don't know if I agree with the whining, because, you know, Gretzky and Yzerman, those guys worked over the officials, but they didn't do it and fixate on one penalty for a prolonged period of time. And so it's picking your Mario Lemieux too.
Exactly, Richie. Pick your spots. Yeah.
I think there is a difference between whining constantly and working the officials. I think, you know, the best players can work the officials. Hey, you missed that, you missed that. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between how it comes out and how it's perceived by the officials, I think.
Maybe not. The distinction can be made in some instances. I'm not sure if it can be made in others. I mean, Sidney Crosby's been called a whiner, but I think by his whining, he's working over the officials. But they can be mutually exclusive to some extent as well.
Mike Ribeiro aside, there have been other complaints with the officiating. Daryl Sutter, after the Kings lost to the Oilers, went on a bit of a diatribe about the officials.
What's he complaining about after that awful call at the end of the game that benefited his team?
The no goal before Yakupov ended up tying the game. I didn't really think. I didn't know really where Daryl Sutter was so upset about. Evgeny Malkin was quite upset earlier this week. I believe he got a game misconduct for verbally abusing the official after the Penguins game. Not sure if that was the Toronto game. I'm going to double-check. Yeah. It was the Toronto game. He got a game misconduct for verbally abusing an official. You know, people just sort of, you know, do you really think that is there something to this these complaints about the officials? Or just everybody's a little bit short-tempered right now?
It's a more intense season. It's short, and the pressure's on. I don't think there's any official issue at all.
No, there's not an official issue. And as we've talked about, officials are constantly reviewing themselves. They talk on a regular basis. They evaluate themselves. They're also evaluated by the NHL. It's a tough job. You're going to make some calls that are bad. And, you know, the fact is, sure, these players, you're Evgeny Malkin, you're Mike Ribeiro, you've been in the league for a while, and you've established yourself. But again, you can't treat them, you know, as if they're inferior. I mean, these guys, they have a hard job. I mean, you see officials, if you've ever, you know, met an official, talked to an official, those guys have to stay in good shape, and they have a tough job. Linesmen have to get in between, you know, guys that are 6'5". I always think of Mike Savic, getting in there. He was always the only guy that was taller.
To Pat Verbeek?
Yeah, exactly. He was the only guy that was actually taller than Zdeno Chara. I think he was about 6'11". But they have a tough job. And, you know, most of the time they do a good job. They miss some calls, but at the end of the day, you have to kind of let it go. That's what you have to do. These guys have to just let it go. And, again, they're not immortal. Evgeny Malkin is not immortal, and if he gives it enough to a ref, he's going to get a penalty.
No argument but there at all. We spoke about this with Ken Holland earlier in the show. Thomas Holmstrom officially announced his retirement from the Detroit Red Wings. You know, your biggest takeaway from Thomas Holmstrom's career?
Well, I mean, if you have a picture of Thomas Holmstrom in your head, the picture is him standing in front of the net, taking a beating, tipping pucks in, and getting rebounds better than anybody in the league. And Kenny Holland mentioned Ryan Smith, who does a tremendous job of that as well. And both not great skaters, both not great shots, just the will. And he talked about the will as well. I mean, Thomas Holmstrom demonstrates to young players that you don't necessarily have to fill the criteria of every scout, and his toughness and his hardworking nature and his ability to sustain an intense amount of pain and punishment and yet go back again and again and again is a testament to his personality and will to want to be what he was. And he was a Stanley Cup champion many times over and well deserved.
4 Stanley Cups. And you know, if they haven't already, they should actually just paint number 96 right in front of the blue paint at Joe Louis Arena, because that's where, you know, that's his home. He was consistent for so many years, such an integral part of the late 90s Cup runs, and so integral of the 2008 win. I mean, the guy, it was such a good grinding power forward, and he had offensive skill. Sure, he stood in front of the net, but he also, you know, had the talent to score goals year after year after year. So it's a big loss, but you know, he's an all-time great. There's many great Detroit Red Wings. When you talk about Yzerman and Fedorov and Lidstrom and Datsyuk, and he's up there. I mean, even though he didn't have as much offensive talent, he carved out a different niche for himself. You know, he was a great NHLer for a long time.
Social media exploded earlier this week and then quickly deflated with comments and rumors regarding Wayne Gretzky potentially becoming the next president of the Toronto Maple Leafs. There was talk, and then Gretzky denied it himself, saying that Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment had made contact with him to gauge his reaction to potentially working in that sort of capacity. Why wouldn't Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment reach out to Wayne Gretzky?
That's a heck of a question. You have 6 guys on that board who have to come to some form of an agreement on things, and I believe it's majority rule, but I'm not sure how they want to do it publicly. I know that, I believe Dale, it appears from my interpretation of what's going on there that Tannenbaum, Dale Lastman seem to have at least thought about and significantly consider the possibility of bringing in Wayne Gretzky as president. I'm not sure if the rest of the board, the Rogers and Bell constituents, have done the same. I don't know why you wouldn't want him there. I mean, just you want him there for a PR and more importantly for his ability to analyze the game and pick out talent. You might not want him to coach talent, and I don't know if you can say what you will about that, but the guy can pick out talent and he knows the game. And so to bring somebody like that in with the star power and the charisma and the cachet, but also more importantly the knowledge that he can bring to a base. And I realize that they have, you know, Dave Poulin's there, Cliff Fletcher's there, Dave Nonis is there. But you create a structure where Gretzky is on the top of the structure, Dave Nonis is underneath, and then Randy Carlyle's underneath, and then they all goes through Wayne. And I can't see how that would be a bad situation.
No, it's only positive. You know, Richie, as you know, Wayne Gretzky's been very quiet. For someone who's the greatest player of all time, he's been really quiet over the years, and obviously there's issues with the Phoenix Coyotes and all that from his time there. But what they're saying is that this is something that, that will get him excited. And this is something that if he's being offered it, he's strongly considering. And, you know, the TSN insiders and all that have said there's been no direct contact. Okay, fine. But a hockey mind like that, the way he...
Any organization would be happy to take on
the way
Wayne
he engineered
Gretzky.
The Olympic teams. I mean, if Wayne Gretzky wants the job, I think we'd all agree that he's going to get it.
Agreed. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some injuries around the NHL this week. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Little less than 30 minutes to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you haven't had enough of us, we're going to be filling in for Hustler and Lawless tomorrow, starting at 3 o'clock for Winnipeg Jets game day. We're on from 3 to 6, and then Rick Ralph and the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show live from Boston Pizza City Place at 6 p.m., and then Brian Munns with the call of the Jets Islanders at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. So a double dose of Illegal Curve this weekend on TSN 1290. Gentlemen, a number of injuries in the NHL so far this week and this year, because they're one and the same. Most of the injuries I thought would come about would be sort of pulls, muscle pulls, because the players might not be in shape. But that certainly isn't the case with the injuries this week. Let's start in Toronto with Joffrey Leupel, who fractured his forearm and is out for a minimum of 6 weeks. You know, anything you can read into it, or just a function of just being bad luck getting hit by a slap shot?
Well, I'm pretty sure. Are we talking Joffrey Leupel first, or are we talking Scotty Hartnell?
Start with Joffrey Leupel, and then we can go to Scotty Hartnell.
I think, you know, both players getting injured is obviously going to affect the lineup. It looks like Clark MacArthur goes in the left wing spot with Tyler Bozak and Phil Kessel. But, you know, I believe Leupel didn't play anywhere during the lockout. I think he was just practicing with the team. I might be incorrect about that.
He played in Russia briefly.
Or did he play? Okay, so he played a little bit. Thanks, Reem. He played a little bit in Russia, but they're going to recall Matt Fratton, who's had some success at the AHL level with the Toronto Marlies. But, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs aren't blessed with a lot of naturally gifted scorers. Nazem Kadri's getting a look, and they have other guys in their lineup that are getting a look. And so James Van Riemsdyk is a guy who maybe I think now moves up to the top line, Richie, because Leupel's not there.
Well, you know, in terms of the Leupel injury, though, it's a freak incident, Drew. I mean, a broken forearm, what are you going to do about that? And a lot of these injuries are freak incidents. You mentioned the muscle pulls and all that things. That actually groin injuries, you thought more of those would be, some of those would occur more often. So far, it doesn't really seem to be the case. So maybe the players are in such good shape these days, skating so often, and some of them aren't in tip-top hockey shape because you just can't sit, you can't copy that speed if you're not playing in games every other day. But having said that, it appears that these guys skating so often, even just with the groups of people at the MTS Iceplex or whatever it may be, has allowed them to kind of avoid the injuries that some expect.
Right, and Drew, you know, transitioning to Hartnell.
Yeah.
You know, Hartnell takes a puck in the foot, and I believe it's his metatarsal bone. Yeah, I'm not a doctor. I barely even take care of myself, to be honest with you, on a daily basis. But Scott Hartnell is a huge part of the team. Had his best year ever, scoring 37 goals, playing with Claude Giroux. And, you know, now they're going to a couple of guys. Eric Wellwood's going to step into the lineup now. They have a couple of other guys. They have a rookie also, forgetting his name, Ty McGinn. Another guy, a rookie. I believe he's only 19 years old. Time again, we didn't ask Sanfilippo about him. But that injury is huge, too. But again, the Philadelphia Flyers have so much depth that I'm not worried about, you know, Scotty Hartnell. And, you know, Claude Giroux is such a class player. And Jacob Voracek's going to step in. They'll be fine.
Well, as you know, time and again, you make us laugh.
Nicely done. Steve Downey, Colorado Avalanche. They acquired him last year at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. He's out for the year now with a torn ACL.
Yeah.
What's the impact on this on the Colorado Avalanche?
That's a big one because that team isn't that deep. And, you know, obviously they bring in Parenteau to add some offense. And Downey had performed fairly well for them at the end of last year after they acquired him. A guy who can skate, he's aggressive, he can add in a little bit of offense. Yeah, that's a tough injury for Colorado, a team that is obviously wants to take a shot at that, you know, final playoff spot in the West and sneak into the playoffs. And when you lose a quality player like that, and for the whole season, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that is. I mean, now you've got Jamie McGinn as your second-line left winger where Steve Downey was. not only is Steve Downey, can he drop the gloves and he's a physical player, he was third or fourth, I believe, on the team in scoring last year. So you're losing, you know, 15, possibly, you know, 20 goals in a full season, prorated. He's still going to get goals, whatever that number may be. But that's a big injury. Now you've got no Steve Downey, no Ryan O'Reilly, and, you know, the Avalanche right now are going to have to depend on guys to step up. And, you know, right now Matt Duchene and Paul Stastny, everything's on them. Obviously, Landeskog too, but those guys up the middle, they've got to get going. They didn't have good years last year, so terrible timing.
And let's be honest, you think about what we're talking about in the second hour. Without Ryan O'Reilly, the Downey injury makes it even more difficult.
Sure, you're taking two regulars out of your lineup, one by injury and one by just the fact that he hasn't signed his contract yet. Phoenix Coyotes center Matthew Lombardi, out indefinitely. The team hasn't been clear about what it is. It's an upper body injury. Sounds like it's going to be a long, long time if you read some of the reports that came out today. It just sounds like this isn't going to be a short-term injury. What's the impact on Lombardi's injury on the Coyotes? They had acquired him earlier this week.
They're saying it's not a concussion, Drew, because he's had back concussion issues in the past. But it's an upper body injury, and he's out for a fairly significant amount of time. So I don't really know for sure whether it is or not. We really hope it's not. What did they miss? Obviously, he adds a great speed element. Sometimes he plays a little bit out of control, being that he kind of skates too fast for what he can do. But he can add a nice offensive touch to your game and a fairly reasonable salary level. You know, he's a prototypical Coyotes player. He'd be responsible defensively. He could skate. He wasn't the biggest guy. He, you know, wasn't going to get the most money, but he could add in, you know, if on that prorated season, maybe, you know, 8-10 goals and obviously increase the team's speed. And losing him, it costs them maybe not as much as in past cases, or even if they had, you know, when they had him a couple years ago, because the team was heading into the year without him in the plan. So it's not as if they plan their whole season around Matthew Lombardi playing this role on the team. They just added him recently, so they'll try and replace him. And he's not irreplaceable. With all due respect to Matthew Lombardi, what he adds to the table can really be supplemented by other guys picking up their game just a little bit.
They're strong in the wings. You know, even though in our season preview show last week, I actually picked the Phoenix Coyotes to not make the playoffs, but you look at what Steve Sullivan did earlier this week, got a hat trick. Yeah. Martin Hanzel is playing well. Michael Bodker, you know, Shane Doan is getting points as usual, you know, after signing the new deal before the lockout. They'll be fine. But they acquired Matthew Lombardi, like Richie said, to give them secondary scoring. So, I mean, they were depending on him, but they're too well coached, and their defense is too good for that to be, you know, a significant major injury, and hopefully his season isn't done, but we don't know at this point. It's too early.
It does hurt him up the middle. I haven't seen Phoenix play yet, so I'm just speaking in terms of past reference, but obviously Marty Hansel's a center, but guys like Antoine Vermette, a guy like Steve Sullivan in the past, a guy like David Moss in Calgary, they've all filled in and played center before. And I haven't seen them play, so I'm not sure what they're doing in terms of moving around those parts, but they do have guys with center experience, and Lombardi is a center, so it helps in that regard as well.
Last injury that we're going to talk about, sort of two injuries for the Detroit Red Wings. Ian White is out with a leg laceration for 2 to 3 weeks, and Carlo Koliakovo is out with a shoulder injury for at least a month. You know, the Red Wings certainly weren't deep on the blue line to begin with.
Both can move the puck.
Yep.
And in the Detroit team...
And Jonathan Erickson's injured.
Well, and in the Detroit team, as he that has guys who, you know, it's kind of like Ottawa. We look back at Ottawa last year. And in years past, really, when they were successful. And the years that Ottawa wasn't successful, they really had problems moving the puck out of their back end and getting it to the talented forwards. And Detroit has the talented forwards, but now they're going to have problems moving the puck up front with guys like Ken Huskins, with all due respect, don't have the same puck skills. So, you know, it's the Koliakovo, injury-prone guy. They sign him, literally gets injured right away.
Yep.
Ian White is a guy who's a smaller guy, but
he's had his own injury problems as well.
Yeah, and he can move the puck. So the Detroit... We'll for sure spend more time in their own zone because of these two injuries.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, Richie. We talked about that before Ken Holland came on. You know, the Huskins was pretty much an emergency signing. And Jakob Kindle's
back. I can't
believe
Kent Huskins is still playing hockey.
Well, I mean, he's the type of guy, he's a journeyman defenseman. He's been on a lot of teams, and he's the type of guy, you know, you sign him, he's ready to go. And he played big-time minutes yesterday against the Wild, you know, he can get the job done. But that's a concern for the Red Wings right now. And you have to wonder, you know, can Brendan Smith handle, you know, an increased role? Nicholas Cronwall's already now the number one defenseman with Lidstrom gone, and he doesn't worry me at all because he's a fantastic defenseman. But, you know, we'll see if they can get it done. They sure don't have any lack of offensive talent there with Brunner playing with Zetterberg, and you know, Bertuzzi had the good night last night versus Minnesota. But that's got to be a concern for Babcock.
I lied one more, and that's back to Philadelphia. Andre Mezeros out with a left shoulder injury, yep. Minimum 1 month.
Yeah, you know, hurts them offensively, I think, more than defensively. Andre Mezeros is more of an offensively capable defender. Not that he's awful defensively, but skates, he can move the puck, and he can play the power play. So that hurts the team that is already thin defensively. And Anthony Sanfilippo on the second hour basically said the team has had to adjust their strategy and become more defensively aware. Maybe, you know, their system is more of a defensive slant than in years past, because they just know that their defensemen as a whole, that group of six, cannot do the job without significant help in terms of holding guy forwards back or holding guys on the forecheck a little bit further back, because otherwise you get outnumbered and they're not talented enough to be able to handle that.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's called Rapid Fire. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday afternoon, and before we get to Rapid Fire, we were just sitting around here chatting about the number of top 10 draft picks on the Winnipeg Jets roster.
And then first-round picks overall. I was talking about
12.
It yesterday, traveling with a couple guys, Garth and Mark, and we were talking about, look at the roster of first-round picks, okay? You got Kane, top 10, Jokinen, top 10, Ladd, top 10, Antropov, top 10, Wheeler, top 10, and you got Little just outside the top 10. He's a first-rounder. Jimmy Slater's a first-rounder. Shifley's on the roster. He's
Wellwood
a first-rounder.
Was a first-rounder, too.
And Shifley's a top 10-er. Burmistrov was... Wellwood was fifth round.
Okay.
Burmistrov top...
Not even close.
Burmistrov top 10. I mean, it's crazy. This is a good article for maybe some of our... some of the writers in town to get on to. Ron Hainsey, top 15 pick. Zach Bogosian, top 10 pick. I mean...
You go through the roster, there are a lot of first-round draft picks on the Jets roster.
Isn't it something?
Yeah, it's certainly...
We have something there.
Mark Stewart, first-round pick.
Yeah, there you go. Did you mention Jim Slater?
Jim Slater, yeah, I mentioned
He was a late first-rounder, but he was also a first-rounder.
Al Montoya, top 10 pick.
Yeah, it's a lot of top 10 picks. Some of them, a lot of them haven't probably reached the expectations that the teams had when they drafted them, but that's a separate issue altogether.
If they had all reached their expectations, they wouldn't be on the same team.
That's also very true.
Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire for this Sunday afternoon. We start in Edmonton. Nail Yakupov of the Edmonton Oilers scored a game-tying goal with 4.7 seconds left in the third period on Thursday versus the Los Angeles Kings. The Oilers would go on to win the game in overtime. After scoring the goal, Yakupov celebrated by sliding on his knees all the way from the offensive zone to the Oilers' defensive zone, reminiscent of Theo Fleury's playoff celebration in 1991 when he scored to defeat the Oilers in overtime.
Yep.
Was Yakupov's celebration appropriate, or was it over the top?
Well, I actually went to bed just before that goal was scored and just caught it on the highlights.
It was...
Well, I'm not trying to give people
go on.
You know, a visual here. I'm just saying I didn't see it live. I actually had to watch it on the highlights because it blew up on Twitter when I woke up in the morning. But, you know, he was excited. He scored his first NHL goal, so he was excited and he showed it.
You're on Twitter so much, I actually thought you were on Twitter when you sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Just tweeting. But, you know, I guess it's a subjective thing, and I guess you're asking us because we're subjects. But, you know... I'm gonna say, you know what, Nail, you know, if you're excited, good for him. He's showing it. I have no problem with it.
Over the top. I didn't like it. The goal was great out of the air. Obviously, something had happened before. They called the goal back. But the truth of the matter is, it's in the first week of the season. You score a tying goal against the Kings, and you're sliding into your own zone celebrating.
What happens if you lose that game?
It's just ridiculous.
Foolish.
What are you doing?
Let me just chime in. I watched the game live. The Oilers had already scored to tie the game. The goal was disallowed. The fans were going crazy. They were chanting BS at the refs. Look, he scored a goal. It was an emotional goal. It wasn't much about the goal and tying the game. It was about overcoming the disallowed goal.
No, have some respect for your opponent.
You know, and I don't mind it that the celebration. It's over the top, and it's excessive, and it's ridiculous. And I don't mind it as long as he understands this, that the next time the Kings and Oilers play this year, he's going to have to drop the gloves and fight somebody. And if he
I don't know about that.
He should. If I'm a Los Angeles Kings player, I'm targeting him and I want to fight him. And if he complains about having to fight, well, guess what? You can't have it both ways, Niall. You're going to celebrate like a goof. You're going to have to account for your actions in the next game. So you can't have it both ways. You celebrate, go ahead, go crazy. Just know that you're going to have to drop the gloves. And if you don't want to drop the gloves because you're a rookie and you're not very big and you're still only 18 years old, maybe you should learn to celebrate in a more responsible manner.
I agree with you.
That's the first time you've ever agreed with me, I believe. Anyways, moving on in rapid fire. There aren't very many new rules in the NHL following the lockout, but one of the new rules that was enacted is that no longer is a player allowed to win a face-off by using his glove. Previously, we had seen instances where a player will tie up an opponent's stick and then use his glove to pass the puck to a teammate. Mm-hmm. Doing so now will result in a minor penalty being called against the offending player, something we have seen called a couple of times so far this year. Do you agree with this new rule?
I mentioned that I watched the LA game earlier on in the season, and Jarrett Stoll is obviously a center for the LA Kings, and they actually showed Jarrett Stoll have to stop, because often what happens, Richie, as you know, because when we coached, you've coached a couple of teams, when you work on faceoffs, a lot of the time both guys lock up their sticks, and what happens is the guy wants to reach down and then just scoop the puck back to his defenseman. And they actually, I thought TSN did a great job of showing Jarrett Stoll, and what he had to do is actually hold himself back, and you could see him, you know, actually knowing that that the new rule had come into play, and what he had to do was actually just hold up and then, you know, use his skate, and then obviously and eventually use his stick. But you know, that's these guys are going to have to adjust, and they always do.
I like the rule. I think you should have to win it based on stick position, based on your form, and based on a bunch of other things. I'm more of a face-off purist. I like the fact that, you know, guys like Matty Mahotra, good on draws, have to learn how to not use their hands. And I think it's also a safety measure too, Drew.
Sure.
You know, don't step on hands and the risk of stepping on wrists and things like that. So I think overall I'm completely in favor of the new rule.
Another one of the new rules or clauses in the CBA, not so much affecting on-ice performance, is that players who are not on entry-level contracts are now entitled to their own rooms when own hotel rooms, I should add, when playing on the road. For some players, this is obviously appealing, but for some members of the Buffalo Sabres, this has become problematic. Sabres forward Patrick Kaleta lamented that he no longer has a roommate to help him ensure that he gets to meals, meetings, and bus rides on time. Thomas Vanek and Andre Sequeira took it one step further and decided that they would share a hotel suite together while on a recent road trip. Would you prefer your own hotel room, or would you be concerned about the loneliness factor and instead opt to stay in a room with a teammate?
Well, let me jump in here first. First, I can relate completely to Pat Kaleta. I know what it's like to not be able to wake up on time for something, so I could definitely use a roommate. Remus and I, when we were at the draft in St. Paul, Minnesota, Remus would actually wake me up by giving me an elbow drop off of the top rope from the other room. So I know what it's like. I have trouble waking up. So it looks like, though, if these guys want to share a room, it's pretty funny. What do they do, leave an empty room empty?
It's ironic that you have trouble waking up, considering anybody in the same room as you has trouble sleeping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's like a truck.
If I have to share a room with Ezzy, I'm taking my own room.
I agree. I mean, this is actually authentic snoring. People don't realize this is him snoring in Minneapolis when you're with him.
Took the microphone and recorded it.
I guess so. Then maybe I should, you know, see if TSN 1290 will give me my own room. The only problem is I'm not on the payroll.
Vancouver Canucks owner Francesco Aquilini is apparently going through divorce proceedings with his soon-to-be ex-wife. According to court documents, Talia Aquilini is looking for court approval to sell 1,900 bottles of the family's wine collection after receiving an offer on the collection from a wine connoisseur. How much would you pay for 1,900 bottles of wine?
Again, I don't know where you dig this stuff up, but 1,900 bottles of wine, I guess it depends on what year it is and everything. I have absolutely no idea. I drink beer. So I'm going to say, I don't know,
$5,000. Well, something about $5,000, but what kind of question is this?
I'll tell you, I go into the LC and I look at the bottles of wine. I have no idea what I'm doing.
Yeah, you get the cheapest $12 wine that you can.
A Shiraz, a Pinot Noir. What are the other ones?
There's a lot of different kinds.
Merlot
is one.
Cabernet, Sauvignon.
So what would you guys pay? I know that Ezzy wouldn't pay more than $5,000, apparently.
I know why Drew's asking this question.
Which is a solid $2.50 per
bottle. Drew has dinner on the lake, the river tonight.
Drew does have dinner on the river tonight. But Drew, are you also the secret bidder for this wine?
No, I'm not the secret bidder for the wine. $620,000 is the answer, by the way.
What?
Yeah.
You better be enjoying those sips if you're paying that much money.
I would say so. Because if you're not a real big wine connoisseur, that's a waste of about $620,000.
Drew, do you know that I've heard a rumor that Ezzy actually cut a hole in the ice where you're sitting on the river tonight?
Again, that wouldn't surprise me. I'm not too based on how cold it's been this past week, I'm not too concerned whatsoever about the river not being able to hold me, but that's okay. Anyways, let's finish up the show with the final segment. It's Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy. And Jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock started with Cheers and Jeers.
Oh, it's always fun to be on the air on a Saturday, January 26th, to give a cheer to the greatest hockey player of all time. Wayne Gretzky turns 52 today, and if I was fortunate enough to run a hockey team, he might still be in my lineup today. Give a happy birthday wish to the great one.
Is he?
Even though I'd like to cheer Paulina Gretzky, you know what? I'm going to give my cheer to Claude Noel, and this is why. I liked the line combinations, decisions he made. I like how he changed up the lines and he put Evander Kane alongside Olli Jokinen and Blake Wheeler, and it looks like he's sticking with it. You know what? I love Claude. I don't have to explain myself. Claude gets my cheer.
I'll tell you. You know, I have two cheers to do here, and I was torn between both of them, so I'll take my editorial license and do both of them. First cheer goes to the Paul McLean lookalike in Ottawa, because that was hilarious. The guy who just looks like Paul McLean, he was right behind the bench, so you got Paul McLean in your screen, and then right behind him, just outside the Ottawa Senators bench, is this Paul McLean lookalike sitting in the first row of seats. He gave a hilarious interview afterwards. The next day, I guess they found him or wherever he worked, and he gave a hilarious interview. Just funny guy.
Did we find out if that guy was, if it was just a coincidence that he was there, or did someone tell him to go beside?
Oh, come on.
What?
It's not a coincidence.
I don't know. How am I supposed to know?
Coincidence that he's at the game sitting right behind Paul McLean, like, looking identical to Paul McLean?
I mean, this is a real person. It's not like they just created this person for that one night.
Is it true that, by the way, that Paul McLean didn't know about the guy?
I don't know.
That was a joke.
He had to have known about him at some point during the game, I would assume.
The guy knew he looked like Paul McLean. Well, he knew someone who had tickets. He's like, I'll go sit there. It'll be funny.
Yeah, obviously. For him. Yeah. And my real cheer, and this is, I think, a more important one, Josh Harding of the Minnesota Wild.
Absolutely.
He got his first shutout in his first game since being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Right. So we want to give a shout out to Josh Harding for overcoming that. And it's going to be a factor in his life, obviously probably for the rest of his life. But at least it's not ruining his hockey career or anything along those lines.
Yep.
So a cheer to Josh Harding for having a successful first game after receiving that diagnosis.
Amen.
That is it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday afternoon. A big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, David Carr of Monopoly Realty, and Dr. Les Rikus at the Linden Market Dental Center. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. A big thank you to our guests, Detroit Red Wings General Manager Ken Holland, PhiladelphiaFlyers.com writer Anthony Sanfilippo, and Vancouver Province writer Ben Kuzma. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website is www.IllegalCurve.com. A reminder, double duty for Illegal Curve will be filling in for Hustler and Lawless tomorrow on Winnipeg Jets game day from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock, so you can join us down at Boston Pizza City Place. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.